2017 was full of surprises. In national politics, Governor Rick Snyder held the line against efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. The GOP version of tax reform was pushed through Congress, and veteran Congressman John Conyers of Detroit ended a half century in office after being accused of sexual misconduct. Across Michigan, unemployment orbited around the lowest national rate in 17 years, with active Michigan jobs nearly matching its labor force. To help close the debt on pensions, Michigan lawmakers changed the retirement plan for teachers, moving it closer to a 401k system. And budgets continued to inch ahead in most state programs. Meanwhile, the Upper Peninsula saw more jobs and development, strong energy initiatives, conclusions to some grisly crime stories, and a succession of severe weather events we hope is not a sign of things to come. We'll talk to some key journalists about the region's top stories for 2017, just ahead on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Joining me on the panel, WLUC TV6 News Director Steve Asplin and Great Lakes Radio News Director Walt Lindela. Welcome.
Thank you.
UP jobless rate stood below 5% in October. Year-end figures aren't available, but the UP jobless rate of 4.9% compared with a statewide rate of 4.2 and a national rate of 3.9. Since then, holiday commerce was up. We're seeing some business growth, closures, and transitions. Some old anchor businesses are closing, including Kmart, JCPenney stores, and the Yonkers department store in Marquette. But there seems to be a lot of excitement over other stores like Meijer's coming in. What's the news there?
Well, Meijer is going to be coming in. It's already been in Escanaba. They're going to open in Marquette in May, which is their traditional period of opening new stores. The gas station will open prior to that, which is out on the 41 highway, and Meijer is back off the highway a bit. But it's a family-run organization that's based downstate in, I believe, Grand Rapids. Very popular. It's kind of like a different model for Walmart in regards to that. It has everything and anything that you could possibly want. It's very popular, whether it's Michigan-based or more local than a Walmart, which has gotten extremely large and international. Yeah. That'll be one of the questions to have for the future. You know, you spoke about unemployment or jobs and so forth.
Sure.
There are a lot of jobs out there, and I don't know if there's enough people to fill all the jobs, because anywhere you went during the holiday season or even before that, there's help wanted signs everywhere. And now, after the first of the year, there's still signs out there saying, now hiring.
I checked the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers on Michigan and the UP, and you know, for Michigan, the number of jobs almost matches the labor force. I mean, you don't have that many people unemployed.
One of the big stories of last year was that contractors, builders, construction workers, in the Marquette area, with all of the projects that were going on and are continuing into 2018, such as the hospital, renovations at various businesses, the university, there wasn't the workers. It was very interesting to see that if you had a skilled trade or a labor worker, you could find work pretty easily because of all the projects. There were not enough workers. Smaller scale projects were being put on hold because staff and crews were going into these larger projects that I mentioned, and that seems to continue, or looks like it'll continue into 2018 with some of the Energy Center constructions, continuing renovations at Northern Michigan University, the finishing out of the hospital in Marquette.
Right.
So in terms of that, labor, that kind of work, there was plenty of it. But one of the things that also came out in 2017 that was important to keep in mind is, in terms of work and labor in our area and jobs, we saw a definite influx of entrepreneurial self-starter contractor work. So you had things like the Marquette Chamber of Commerce announce what's called Ampersand, which is a co-working space in downtown Marquette that gives someone who, for example, like yourself, let's just say you wanted as a single proprietor do a project, but you don't have an office. You don't have a space to do it. well, you could rent it out in limited time or for a year or whatnot, and depending on the space you need. And that was the first major co-working space in Marquette and in the region. We've seen smaller ones pop up in the last year in Iron Mountain and other places, but we're seeing the shift into the new economy of independent contractors doing work based where they want to be for wherever they can do it, using higher technologies and mm-hmm. computers, internet, that sort of thing. That's what we're going to see more in the next year or two.
Policy is certainly encouraging that.
I was going to say this past year, to put it in perspective, this past year as far as construction and investment is $1 billion in construction work in Marquette. Mm-hmm. That's what we saw this past year with the roundabouts to the hospital to the, like Walt was saying, the individual businesses making renovations, Wendy's restaurants, okay. all that investment, that's $1 billion, and that's a lot of money for an area such as this.
Let me ask one question about Meyer. I hate to bring this up, but any dark store issues emerging there?
I have not heard any issues with Meyer, and I don't. I'm not sure there are any, but if there are, they have not surfaced to the extent that a Menards, Lowe's, and the others have brought it out.
We saw movement on it in 2017, of course, the dark stores issue, but I think that it's very interesting because at the same time that we're talking about the dark stores matter and the tax tribunal issues and whatnot, that major anchor box stores are leaving Marquette County, leaving the Upper Peninsula, leaving Iron Mountain, leaving Houghton, and it creates this scenario where discussions about the dark stores issue may be somewhat moot if in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years, many of these box stores that are held as the culprits in this conversation don't exist. They're going to close. Okay. Do you understand what
sure.
I'm saying? Is that I think that would be...
And what remains, in any case, is still revenue problems.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's move to another part of the economy. UP Tourism probably got a boost from a 62-page Delta Sky magazine article featuring Upper Michigan landmarks. The economic effect across the region can be remarkable. We saw that, I think, in the last couple of years with some other big breaking, feature stories on the UP. Mm-hmm. But are we seeing the growth that this can bring? I mean, did we see a lot of potential this time realized?
I think so. If you talk to the hoteliers in the Upper Peninsula, especially in the focus areas of Marquette County, Alger County, even into the Copper Country, they saw results. Okay. We heard about Munising, and we've seen developments in Munising now that have happened where a lot of people couldn't get into Marquette, so they ended up going to Munising, or they'd go out to Ishpeming, or they would go to wherever it may be, and those places were starting to get a lot of business. What was interesting about the Delta Sky this time around, because the year before it was focused on Marquette County, this was an Upper Peninsula-based one, and the governor's office was instrumental in getting this done.
I
had a chance to talk with Governor Snyder about it, and he said that his office really values the tourism dollar for the state with the whole Pure Michigan campaign and all of that.
He's been
got involved with it, and his office got involved with it because of the success from the year before. So now we'll be looking forward to this upcoming season to see what it means for more outlying areas across the Upper Peninsula.
Yeah, I think the Delta Sky, both issues that came out with regards to Marquette and the UP, those are a great Kickstarter thing, but I think nothing works better than word of mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, you have somebody visit here, have a good experience, they're going to take that back to wherever they are, Ohio, Illinois, California, and they're going to say, like, hey, I found a place you wouldn't believe. We just talked to somebody the other day that's a snowmobiler in Grand Marais, and they come here to the UP in Grand Marais because they have great snow, there's not a lot of congestion, and it's a great, friendly environment for their experience. And that's what really kind of pays dividends in the long run.
I got you. You mentioned considerable development. One is a permit filing from Eagle Mine to expand to the so-called Eagle East deposit.
Mm-hmm.
What's that about? And is it going to add that many jobs? It's fairly brief, isn't it, in terms of the duration?
It is, but what they're trying to do is extend the life of the current mine.
Okay.
Eagle Mine is got a limit on it. And what they're going to do is they're going to expand underground. It's not going to be above ground. They're going to tunnel underground to the Eagle East area. And as a result, they're going to hit that probably in 2020.
Okay.
And then they're going to have a short span. They've got about 3 years of life for that Eagle East property that they'll mine.
I see.
And take the rock out of there and utilize that. Mm-hmm. So it's a relatively short span of time. It does mean jobs. There's 450 jobs connected to this project and so forth. So that's a good good number.
Sure.
On top of it, they're not $8.95 or $10 an hour.
They're good jobs.
They're good jobs. You're paying upwards of $20, and if you're a specialist, electricians and so forth, there's a lot more to be made there. And that's great because we lost the Empire Mine.
Yeah.
And that closed, and we haven't seen a huge exodus, but still, it's a transformation that I think this area, Marquette County especially, is going through.
Okay. Another key development came in 2017 with state approval of the energy plan from Wisconsin Energy and what's again being called Cleveland Cliffs to replace the Presque Isle Power Plant with two natural gas stations, one in Berrigan and one in Marquette. Regulators say it beats the competing proposals for cost and reliability. I know there was that issue was brought up by one of the competitors, but apparently set to rest by the state. But more distributed generation and growth of renewables is proceeding. What are the interesting energy projects going forward right now, or interesting issues related to energy?
Well, I mean, obviously there's the renewables, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Solar, they have the solar farm here in Marquette, that's through the BLNP.
Really? Mm-hmm.
And they're also looking at a solar farm up in the Berrigan County area through Michigan Tech. They're starting to utilize that. And then there's the individuals that have put solar in their individual homes. And I think that's a very attractive proposal as prices
sure.
come down and they're further away from the grid to try and get that power that's very costly. On the other side, you have wind energy, which I think is going to be a big debate. It already has been down in the Garden Peninsula with people that say they want more setback, they don't like the noise, they don't want the incursion, and so forth.
Right.
But you have this new company that's coming in and saying, we're going to put in a wind farm up on up in the Herman area in the highlands of Berrigan County. And so that's another proposal that's going to go forward in that regards. And the thing is that, you know, they got to find some common ground here. There's got to be some compromise. And it's not easy.
It seems to be a conversation across the country right now. Wind is so easy to do. There was a big rush to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
And it replaced a lot of coal. It's even replaced a lot of coal in Texas, you know, where you expect to see, the old time fossil fuels.
I would say that probably in terms of this last calendar year, the increase in awareness and the availability for the average person to utilize something like solar, as Steve mentioned, the solar farm in Marquette,
yeah.
You know, someone that's a resident can buy one of those grids and mm-hmm. they can utilize that to affect their bill. They're having pretty good success with it. That, you know, 10 years ago was not even going to be something that would be talked about. So I think in 2017, the awareness of alternative energies and then also different approaches to what one would do with their own personal energy consumption
yeah.
was one of the big energy stories.
And I think among utilities, you're seeing a lot of utilities across the country and in Michigan planning for this kind of expansion. The two giant utilities downstate have both got projects going. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, I think the, you know, it's starting to roll out right now. It'll be a while.
You're going to find a big issue in the city of Marquette is what happens to the Shiras. You have this mm-hmm. natural gas-fired turbine system that's currently being utilized.
Yeah.
And Shiras is supposed to be kept and as a backup and type of thing. And now they're looking at, well, we don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens to that power plant? What happens to the property? What happens to the permits? And Presque Isle disappears now.
Okay.
You have a real void in that regards, and you're all reliant on one system. So
okay.
Whether that's feasible or how that's going to go over the public will be interesting to see it develop.
We'll see. UP Health Systems, you mentioned, continues to work on a new hospital. It was a little tough traveling near the construction for a while. Are we all used to the roundabouts yet?
Well, the roundabouts are definitely the...
I'm learning to look left, used to look right.
The big Marquette, one of the big Marquette stories besides the whole political landscape changes that occurred in 2017 is that Marquette is the home of the roundabouts in the UP now.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
That's, you know, they put in six in this last year, and now the township is talking about a couple of them.
Yep.
And
It's energy friendly.
It's energy mm-hmm. friendly. It is designed to be safer than intersections.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a learning curve, no pun intended with the curve part,
yeah.
but you know, it's a learning curve for a lot of residents, but they seem to be adjusting to it. This first winter here that we're currently in, is going to be a big test for, are they going to work out? Are they wide enough? Are they big enough? But
okay, sure.
They're here to stay, so You know, they could change it from the Queen City to the Roundabout City.
You could always go and see the first UP Roundabout in Iron County in Alpha.
Absolutely.
That's been there for decades.
While the community will benefit from the new $300 million Marquette Hospital Complex when it's completed this year, some healthcare boots on the ground, about 400 registered nurses, ended the year without a contract. They're asking for safer staffing levels. I'd heard that on the street, and pitched a two-day strike in October to call attention to them. What's next for the nurses or for hospital staff?
That's the $64,000 question. Okay. What's next? Did they accomplish anything with their strike other than call immediate notice to what the problems are and what they're trying to focus on? Yeah. I'm sure it did, but has it given them any long-term results? I don't see it yet. Yeah. They haven't moved at all. The hospital has not changed their perspective in regards to what it is. And it's hard being on the outside to get the real story, because you talk to people and they're afraid to talk to you, and other people will tell you something that isn't necessarily factual, but it's based on their perspective.
Especially big companies are always reluctant to try and negotiate through the press. Well, so there's always a little bit of a barrier there.
There was a certain amount of, I think, by the nurses union doing what they did. Obviously, they were utilizing grandstanding to get their point across, but that was why they were doing it. They were trying to increase awareness. What I saw
strike might have been dangerous to patients.
Yes, obviously, when you're talking about patient care and you're talking about healthcare, and then what you're doing is taking the people that directly are, as you said, boots on the ground, out of that situation. That's always the risk. But it did increase awareness, and it showed that there is support in the community.
I think so.
And what I've watched consistently through this whole process is I just don't feel that the corporate structure of Duke Life Point, UP Health System, allows them as an organization to get in front of these things, and then they're playing cleanup because speculation and rumors and all of that starts to run rampant in the community, and they don't seem to be getting in front of it. I mean, the whole locked doors incident that was live on your station, Steve.
Yep.
I mean, that was, that's a tough PR one to get out from under. And they're doing what they can as an organization, but it's been a constant uphill battle for the hospital to get that, become embraced in the community with the changes that they're bringing in.
And they've always had a PR reputation issue in the community, and that's what they're trying to overcome. It's a great facility. They do some fantastic work. But at the same time, you know, they're trying to downsize their hospital staff based on the fact that when you have a new hospital, you don't need 1,000 employees. You need 560 employees or whatever.
Yeah.
And as a result, you have to attune to that number because it's the bottom line that's speaking the loudest.
Okay. We're going to take a moment here to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners, we're talking about 2017 in review with WLUC TV 6 News Director Steve Asplund and Great Lakes Radio News Director Walt Lindela. Meanwhile, Bellin Health announced plans to buy Dickinson County Healthcare System. What's the reason there, Debt?
Healthcare is extremely expensive to do, and I think they saw a partnership. Bellin already had a clinic in an area in Iron Mountain, and I think there's a partnership there that they see to develop that way. What you're going to see, though, is that you're going to have Dickinson County Memorial, Dickinson County Health Systems teaming up with Bellin, which means their patients will go to Green Bay. They are not going to go to Marquette. They're not going to stay in the UP. And I think Bellin made an attractive offer. They got a great reputation. And they'll make inroads in that area. And as a result, I think DCHS will get stronger and have a good imprint. And they're one of the top-rated hospitals in the UP to begin with.
Okay.
I mean, they get A ratings from the surveys and so forth. And as a result, they're already looked with high esteem.
Great.
In regards to what they do.
Speaking of transitions, Marquette and the region lost two admired leaders in 2017. Mm-hmm. First, with the tragic suicide of 109th District State Representative John Kivla, who wrestled with alcohol. I'm going to miss John's spirit, hard work, and his political optimism. He got things done. He passed a lot of legislation. Your thoughts?
Well, I got to know John pretty well, you know, by virtue of him in the Marquette political scene and the business scene. I interviewed him countless times. In fact, the last time I saw him in person was on this very set.
Yeah.
It was shocking to lose him that way, to see the outpouring of support or for the family.
Around the state.
And that
and
came.
Both sides of the aisle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it was it was a difficult thing because if you knew him, he was very good at obviously keeping some things hidden that were in his personal life. And, you know, that shouldn't affect one's political or professional life, and it didn't seem to. It seemed like he really built some great coalitions that I feel that since his death have already deteriorated. They're just not there because of the perhaps political aspirations of some of the previous colleagues in the coalition, the UP coalition he always mm-hmm. talked about, having their own political aspirations and what they want to do, especially in the opening Senate seat for Tom Casperson's seat, as he is mm-hmm. term limited out, but a definite tragic loss, a major shame, I'm sure.
John was just a nice guy.
He was.
You know, he was one of those guys that became a politician, not because that was his career track, it's because he wanted to help people. Yeah. He wanted to make a difference in their lives, and if they had an issue, he wanted to take care of it. And, you know, he came up through the ranks as a working guy, blue collar, mm-hmm. you know, and then he got involved with the city commission and then moved on from there. And he was a natural at it. You know, he just wanted to help people get things done.
And he loved doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it surprised him that he loved doing it.
I think it did.
It did. It did. When you talked to him about it and he found that he really loved it. Mm-hmm. I remember going down to Lansing for a meeting and having an opportunity to get a tour of the Capitol with him. And he was just so excited, but so respectful of the process and the spaces where this legislation was being made, that he understood that these votes and these conversations affected people's lives. Yeah. And we don't always get that feeling from all politicians.
Yeah, he had that DHHS issue with personnel and so forth. You know, muddy waters, very controversial, very, you know, politically damaging. Yeah. But he wanted to fix it because he saw people being affected by it, and he did. And everybody was a lot better off as a result of that work.
The someone with a similar spirit, I think, was Tom Baldini. We lost him just before Christmas. His political service ranged from international and congressional appointments to state and local government. He wasn't a real upfront guy, but I don't think there was anything he wasn't involved with that you know that edged on politics or that hedged on politics or the Democratic Party. He was very active. He was an incredible resource on education, politics, labor. I'm just going to miss all that he knew and his experience and support. You know, any special thoughts there?
Yeah, he's again another nice guy.
Yeah.
Why are we losing the nice guys? But you know, he's the kind of guy that you know was always there, but you really didn't. He wasn't out in front.
Right.
He was the guy that was doing the work. The Economic Club of Marquette County. He was the driving force behind that group. And if you had a question about something, you could call him up and he would talk to you as a normal guy and not, you know, have
He'd
any preconceived.
He'd line you up with people to talk to.
Yeah. And he said, I know that guy. Here's their number. It's like, fantastic. And he's just, again, a nice guy and he will sorely be missed throughout all walks.
I fully agree with that also, that he will be completely missed and not being in our community. But the one thing that I took away following his sudden loss was that he touched a lot of people because primarily at the root of it all, he was an educator. He wanted to make people better.
Yeah.
He wanted to teach them. That was his career was teaching, but he utilized all of these other opportunities to make you better and to make you better and to make me better in this whole process of understanding and learning. So he was truly a man who was educated, who wanted to share that education with people, and he'll definitely be missed.
All right. Let me get a real brief reaction to some of the UP crime stories of the year. Some really brutal cases and strange cases. Kelly Crockett was sentenced in Iron County to life in prison for the murder of Christopher Reagan in 2014. She still faces another murder charge.
Yeah, her husband, Jason Cochran, that was involved, his death down in Indiana, and that yet has to come to the forefront and to court, but they're under no pretense that they need to rush on this because she's not getting out ever.
Yeah, she's not going anywhere.
So they're looking at probably saving money and saying like, okay, well, we got her.
Also in Iron County, Alfred Sario was convicted and sentenced in the death of his 29-year-old stepdaughter. Mm-hmm. Daryl Gutzman of Marquette received a life sentence for the December 2016 stabbing of a woman at K.I. Sawyer. These are like one-off sorts of crimes, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's not a crime spree of any kind or anything like. With Gutzman, it was just one of those things of a relationship gone bad, you know, somebody flipping out, overreacting, and as a result, a very tragic and very sad outcome in regards to his case. And now he's going to prison.
Kidnappings were also in the news. Eric Ruska pleaded guilty to kidnapping a female co-worker in July. In March, an Ishpeming man was exonerated at a 2013 kidnapping and torture case. What's the story behind that new outcome for Jason Sadowski?
Jason Sadowski, basically, he was tied with another individual. His name escapes me right now.
Okay.
Of holding two women, kidnapping him, basically tying him up and holding him in a basement in Ishpeming. Mm-hmm. As a result, now they've gone back to court. He wanted a retrial because he said the other guy did it all and he had nothing to do with it. They did a retrial. The jury of 12 found him or acquitted him of any crime.
Really?
So he was acquitted of that crime. And the federal government immediately took him into custody based on the fact that there was a federal gun violation.
I see.
Well, in April, I believe it was, the Fed said, we're not going to prosecute. We've wiped the slate clean.
They vacated the case.
So basically, he's a free man, and he's back in the public. And where he is, if he's locally here or not, I don't know.
Okay. No matter where you stand on climate change, it seems the weather was the news throughout 2017. Extreme weather events and dramatic breaches of precedent began with one of the warmest Februaries on record. In March, we saw major wind storms causing structure damage and downing power lines. April gave us high winds, golf ball size hail. In fact, the whole gamut of precipitation, it seemed like, in that month. June was one of the wettest months on record, and that just gets us to summer. In October, we had really the conditions that sunk the Edmund Fitzgerald turned up in what was called a phenomenon of bombogenesis.
Yeah,
I learned that word.
It was quite a year for weather. I mean,
down trees and power lines and took out picnic rocks.
Right? Yeah, that storm, of course, resulted in the death of two people that were not following the rules, and they were somewhere where they shouldn't have been, and they got swept in. But it just drives home the fact that while we may not have some of the extremes we're seeing in some other parts of the country with hurricanes and things along those lines, we still do have a good amount of interesting and challenging weather to handle here, to say the least.
I wonder if we've got that to come.
2018 starting off below zero, so I hope it doesn't go that way.
You've got a meteorologist on staff, so you can, you know, what's the story there? We got about 20 seconds.
Basically, looking at climate change, it's just all cyclical. That's the theme of it. It's like we're just through a cycle here, and we'll come out of it, and we'll go another direction. So that's basically the storyline.
The sun will come out tomorrow.
We're going to have
really
to live with it.
Will.
We've been talking about the year 2017 in review with WLUC TV6 director, news director Steve Asplin, and Great Lakes Radio news director Walt Lindela. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on MediaMeet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.